A Benson Diary, and written as usual by John Murphy, starts with a poem. Past emerald plains and furrowed mountains old, whose violet gorges snare the wandering eye, the pillared palms day's dying embers hold, like shafts of bronze against the crimson sky, and every cloud mirrors its rosy fold in tremulous waves which blush and wander by. Christmas carols fade away, and New Year has come and gone, and of a sudden winter entered our world, dusting hills with frost, dressing woods and fields with patchy snow, and coating all our many narrow lanes and winding paths with treacherous ice. For days in succession, there were cloudless skies, bright and blue, marked only by icy contrails from crossing plains, and by our own exhalations condensing into a whispery stream like dragon's breath. Temperatures fell further each starry, starry night time, and Benson, wearing its icy crown as England's coldest place, reached -9. Hoarfrost decorated the hedges and grass. The tennis courts and playground and cars froze in their parking place. In the woods, leaves that had squelched through much of December became crunchy underfoot. And also, each day, in those precious minutes between day and night, sun's decline painted coral skies that wonderfully etched in charcoal the spine of the Ridgeway's length, before its molten orange disk, larger than life, slowly sank to earth, seeming set to illuminate some special hidden place, as once its setting glory had lit the sights of those gloriously golden tombs of dead pharaohs. And it being England, even in 2026 trains stopped running and power waned and water ceased to run in taps. It is part of our genius that the subject of our most obsessive interest, the weather, should time and again catch us unprepared. Our two dogs very much like frost and snow. I'm not quite sure why, but it seems to excite their olfactory senses, which almost doubles the length of time even the shortest walk takes. However, even if it's a bit slippery, there can hardly be a greater joy than seeing your dogs so deliriously excited to be alive. We kept our decorations up almost until the octave of Epiphany. Those in the village seemed to come down quite sharply upon the new year. It's strange how suddenly bare everything seems when the lights and greenery are gone. Every year we have the greatest joy walking Milo around the village to see the Festival of Light. Poor Finn is too nervous for village walking. Barking mad probably does Finn justice. Not everything is bare, as I see the local vigilante flag staff have been busy running up the Union flag and the flag of St George on our lampposts. I puzzled whether we were in mourning since so many are at half-mast. But perhaps ambition to make a point didn't quite reach for the skies. As harmless pastimes go, flag waving is as harmless as any, although I've ever regarded this as much more an American passion than a British one, save at coronations and the last night of the proms. I suspect, however, these visitations are intended to make a point that's artfully exclusive and political in nature, rather than designed to be an artlessly inclusive addition to the villagescape. And let's be frank, what may be sourced for the uber-nationalist goose may find itself sourced for the Eurogander, and many other flag-waving causes. All you need, apparently, is enough money to hire a cherry picker and you're in business. I'd quite like to see some Frideswides cross-flying too, although those clambering lampposts probably have no idea who she was or why she is so important to Oxfordshire. Over Christmas, I learned that George and Barbara Vernon will be leaving the village in early February. They have played such a part in village life for many years, and long before we came here a decade ago. The Bensington Society and Benson Library were among the many causes they supported, not only with fine words, but hard graft. I know some of George's visionary ideas were sadly never realised, but we all owe them both a debt of gratitude. They made the village a better place in many ways, and with many kindnesses over many years. I hope they find cause to come back soon to see us all from time to time. Winter's chill combined with holiday advertising and Christmas TV, which featured any number of versions of Agatha Christie's Death on the Nile, has made me think of Egypt. This month's poet is Thomas Gold Appleton. He was a friend of Longfellow and primarily an artist and something of a wit. A Harvard man, he was amongst that cadre of wealthy Americans who liked to travel and made vacationing a way of life. It was Appleton who once famously observed, "Good Americans, when they die, go to Paris." He came to poetics later in his career. In his dying days, he was supposed to have said to Longfellow, "How interesting all this is. It will be a new experience." I've a soft spot for his Nile poems. And John ends with the poem, which is called A Sunset on the Nile. "We float and feel the magic penetrate till all our soul is coloured by the hues. Making a heaven of earth and satiate with splendour, we forego the use of speech and reverently wait while fades the glory with the falling dews. And darkness seals for memory each gleam, happy to know it was not all a dream." And that's by Thomas Gold Appleton.